Morning. This is episode in the regional of 23.
It is. Because...
ish.
We have made another episode.
Have you officially lost count? I have.
Not quite, but it's because we've recorded another episode, but we haven't had a chance to edit it all yet. So we might have said that was 23.
More of that later. So it's kind of 20. If anyone's keeping count, we should be. So why don't we just be definitive and say, welcome to episode 23 of the Mallorca Mallorca podcast.
Woohoo!
I say Mallorca and you say Mallorca. I say
Mallorca
and you say
Mallorca.
Mallorca, 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 Mallorca. Let's call the whole thing off.
I'm Oliver Nielsen.
I'm Vicky McLeod.
And this is most definitely episode 23. We've got the window open and a car's going past because it's spring.
It's such a nice day today. The sun is coming through the window. I can hear... it's a motor. I don't think it's a lawnmower. It sounds like a chainsaw.
Don't really get lawnmowers very much here, do you?
I know, but it would be like, you know, when people cut their lawn and you get that smell of the grass?
Yeah.
It's that kind of feeling. The sun is really warm.
British people have lawnmowers. Spanish people have strimmers. Take the edge
apart.
There you go. You know, lawns aren't a massive thing here.
No.
Anyway, look, it's glorious. And so you start thinking, oh, I don't need my jumper anymore.
There's a possibility in the air.
You start looking at the sea going, not quite yet. Not far off. I can see it.
It's definitely not ready. Yeah. I'm not ready for the sea yet.
And I've got a nose full of pine pollen.
Oh, nice. The listener needed to know that.
Everywhere.
Actually.
Yeah, it's half an inch thick green dust on everything and in everything, inside cameras, inside the car,
inside your lungs,
up my nose. I'm not one of those allergy people in the main, but
so nasty.
The pine pollen. Just itchy eyes and dry.
You have been spectacularly grumpy this week, actually.
Is that what it is?
Yeah. Blame the pollen.
Okay. Not my fault.
But you've been out and about. You saw a pretty amazing boat last week. Is it last week now you saw the boat?
This week, actually. A gigantic boat. We live near Port Andratch, which makes a sound flash because Port Andratch is flash. We're the country folk that live over the hill.
We were where service lives.
We live very close to Port Andratch if you're a real estate agent. They like to... it's only 5 minutes down the road. It's quite a flash part of the world. It's very pretty. And people like to lord it about with their big flash toys. And one guy in Andratch this week made everyone else feel like a piece of cheese.
Rather insignificant.
You know life is going well when your boat won't fit in the marina. And this one,
oh my lord, it's
didn't
huge.
Fit in the harbour.
No,
it's the super yacht Nord.
It's incredible. It's extraordinary.
$500 million. If you've, I was going to say, if you won the lottery, but you might have to win it three times.
I don't think I'd spend all my money on a boat.
No, he hasn't spent all his money on a boat. He spent some of his money on
a
boat.
He spent a small proportion of his money.
He has
on
got
a
quite
boat.
A lot of it. As I actually did the maths, it's if I base his boat. He's a Russian oligarch.
Alexei Alexandrovich Murdashov.
I'm glad you did that. Nowhere else has oligarchs, do they? You never hear about a Dutch oligarch, do you? All Russian oligarchs.
He's the main shareholder and chairman of Sevestal, which is a Russian conglomerate with interest in metal, energy and mining companies. And he was reported in the CEO... World magazine as being only Russia's fourth richest person, actually, with an estimated worth of $20.5 billion.
That's quite a lot, isn't it? So I did the maths. It's only 55 as well.
Oh, stop.
I'm 50 next month, so I've still got time.
You've still got time.
To win the lottery 15 times. More than that. But yeah, he's I can't remember what I was going
to
say then.
You were going to try to explain to me how the cost of his boat was a tiny proportion of his wealth. I
did some maths.
Is that what you were going to do?
I worked out his net worth and his boat in comparison and my net worth.
Uh-huh.
And it would be actually slightly more ostentatious if I bought a second-hand Ford Fiesta. By comparison.
Really? Well, we're in the process of doing that, aren't we?
I know. Superyacht Nord is gigantic. It is 142 metres, which are in the nautical business. Well, no, it's a big one. It's got more than one helipad, which is also so.
Why do you need more than one helipad?
Well, maybe his and hers helicopters. I don't know. 45 staff. It's all very nice, anyway. So it's just been finished, hasn't it? So I think it's on its sea trials. It looks like it worked, anyway. So it's been generally gadding about the south coast.
It's very beautiful. It's actually quite stunning.
It is quite a nice one, actually, isn't it? They're often quite vulgar.
It's funny though, the super yacht industry, and I have got a lot of friends and some clients in the super yacht industry.
Careful.
The super yacht industry are very focused on environmentally friendly things, and then they come out with one of those.
It's
quite extraordinary.
It is. I mean, yeah, it's nice. Obviously, the super yacht business spends its time in rather beautiful parts of the world, but they do burn a horrific amount of fossil fuel. I was trying to work out just how distant I am from this guy in terms of wealth. I think if you added up all the money I've ever earned in my life, and probably all the money I'm ever going to earn in my life, I would probably have enough fuel to get that boat from Andrash to Palma. But not the other way around.
Oh my goodness.
It's a one-way trip.
That does put it in perspective,
doesn't it? It does. Anyway, what else has been going on?
Oh, you wanted to talk about hiking.
Actually, yeah, well, I thought I'd just mention this. We did a hiking episode a while back because we're still in hiking season. And the Mallorcan government is continuing to plug it as a destination option because it's a good out-of-season business. You know, it's not difficult to get people to Mallorca in the summer, hopefully, anyway. It's a bit more difficult to get them here in the spring and autumn and winter. So things like hiking, climbing, cycling are quite a big...
And they're so nice as well.
It's gorgeous. So as we mentioned, we walked the GR221, we walked, which is the footpath that runs the spine of the Tramontana Mountains. There are these government-run hostels, and they've got a couple more being opened up, also in the Tramontana. There's the Finca Planitia in Banyol Bufar, which is one of those. It's beautiful.
That's good because there isn't really many places to stay in Banyol Bufar.
Not the south, no, exactly. So... That it's one of those public fincas, so these big plots of land that...
Oh, fantastic.
It is gorgeous. It goes right up from the coastline to the mountain. That part of the Tramontana coast is stunning. You're not far from Richard Branson there either, we talked about last time. But you can stay in the Finca Planitia for a lot less. It's a public finca, which is an estate that has been gifted to the government for them to look after it and to turn into outdoor recreation. And there's an old building on there that they're going to be turning into one of these hostels. There's also another one in the Finca Galazzo, which is...
That's going to be great.
Actually, I've got to say this properly. I was told off by my daughter today.
Galazzo.
Galazzo.
Yes.
Which is in Capdea, runs from Capdea, the little village in Calvia, and runs to the summit of the mountain. And there's going to be another one there. They are both under construction, so places to see. Both of those are on different bits of the GR221.
That'd be really good.
It will be good.
Kind of breaks up the walk for some people as well if they can't.
It gives you more options as well. And also, the part of the reason they're doing it is because the GR221 is becoming a bit too successful. There's some running
it?
Out. Yeah, the hostels.
Oh, they haven't got enough beds.
Yeah, exactly. So if you're walking the footpath and you can't stay in the hostels, it's very difficult to walk the footpath. So they're upping the amount of accommodation.
Great.
It is good. Yeah. And while we're talking about that, actually, there's a bit in the Independent this week. Annie Bennett, who's a writer.
Oh, the Annie Bennett.
Have you met her?
But she's a very well-known correspondent for Spain.
Yeah, she is. Exactly. Writes a lot about Spain.
In fact, I might have her on Facebook.
I have too, actually. Mm. She was talking about the sustainability of tourism and the way that Mallorcan government is pushing
to ban single-use plastics.
I know, but I was reading this. So her article was talking about the increasing of the marketing of hiking, the increasing construction of cycle paths they're going to be building through Palma and outside Palma, but also the reduction or complete elimination, actually, of single-use plastics. And it says here, March the 20th.
This is really exciting.
Yeah, it is. Which it snuck up on me, actually, considering it's now March, what is it, 14th?
Yeah. Well, it says March 14th tomorrow. It says no plastic from the 20th of March. It was a week today. There'll be no plastic glasses, plates, trays, cutlery, straws, coffee capsules. Coffee capsules. This is going to revolutionise the office. Cotton buds or disposable razors or lighters can be sold on the islands.
Yeah, yeah, and
wow.
This is not plastic bottles yet, but they're aiming to.
That's so great.
Yeah, exactly. So that's coming next week. So,
that's going to make a massive impact on not just on the land, but also on the marine environment as well.
It is, because however carefully you put these things in the bin, a bit of a gust of wind, they do end up in the sea.
We're in a recycling scheme in our village. Every night we are asked to put out a different type of rubbish. We have to separate our rubbish in our house. And it's shocking the amount of plastic that even we get through. Even though, I mean, like, we cook most of our food from scratch, there's still lots of plastic packaging and what have you that we get through. And I'm really excited to see how we can reduce it more.
We made a move to a soda stream, which is quite revolutionary.
Yeah. Oh, I know. Well, it's very retro and revolutionary.
My mum wouldn't let me have one when I was 8. So now I'm nearly 50, I've got a soda stream. So take that, Mrs. Nairn.
But did you yet try to carbonate milk?
No, actually, that's exactly what I wanted to do when I was 8, was carbonate everything. And now I'm just sticking to fizzy water. I'm not the man I used to be.
Should we talk about Amanda Gorman?
Yeah.
How do you feel about this? Do you know about this?
I do know about this. Amanda Gorman was the poet.
Yes, fantastic. She's only 22. Performance she's, at the inauguration of President Biden.
She kind of stole the show a little bit. Which was not her job, but it was. She read that amazing poem that was talking about various things, including the what was it? What were we calling it now? The attempted coup, the storming of the Capitol. All sounds a bit dramatic.
Yeah, about overcoming adversity. Really, it was really a beautiful poem. It was read very well, and it's also, I think, really lovely when you see a poet reading their own work. It's always really inspiring, and it was great to watch it.
Yeah.
And now this poem is being translated into loads of different languages. And last week or the week before, it was being translated into Dutch.
Okay.
And the Amanda Gorman's publishers wanted they wouldn't allow a male white Dutchman who obviously is a professional translator of poetry to translate her poem into Dutch. They insisted on it being a black female activist translator. That's very, I mean, that's a lot of things.
That's quite niche, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to say that actually translate people who I met, we met a translator at the weekend, actually. No, she's an interpreter, not a translator.
Okay.
And you know what the difference is?
Go on.
An interpreter does it orally and a translator does it in writing. Anyway, I was like, she looked at me when I said, "What's the difference?" She looked at me like, "Are you stupid?" Clearly, yes.
They have the same issue in Catalonia as well. There was a man, Victor Obiols, was translating the work, and the publishers had exactly the same complaint. They said, "We want a woman, a female, young activist, who's preferably black," which I don't know. It seems a bit. I don't know.
But the thing is, that's really good to encourage other people who are being marginalised by that kind of part of society to encourage them, to give them opportunities to do that work. But, I mean, it doesn't reflect completely in how you... and how you translate things. Because, I mean, like, for example, this man, this Victor, what's his name? Victor?
Obiols.
Obiols. He's translated Shakespeare and Chaucer and, like, really, really ancient texts. So are you saying that you have... Exactly. Are you saying that only a gay man can translate a gay man's words?
We don't know much about Victor.
Well, true enough. We don't know if Victor is a gay guy or not. Mm-hmm. But like, how specific does it have to become? I mean, it's just that I think it's just raising an interesting debate about how we approach those things, because obviously everybody needs that opportunity, and we as white people do already have massive advantages over somebody like Amanda Gorman, who's had to really fight for the position that she's got now.
It is complicated. I mean, it's a similar thing when you find about, there have been controversies about straight actors playing gay characters Again, and you know, they really wouldn't want to be doing that. But then it's kind of, that's exactly what acting is, isn't it?
But it's also
pretending to be something.
You're not. I don't know. I think Gigi was telling me that Lady Gaga has been in a movie recently where one of the characters in the movie is autistic, and that the movie is now receiving some very serious backlash because they should have hired an autistic actor.
Yeah.
It's like,
it does get complicated.
It's getting more and more detailed. I mean, and then you know, there is that point where it's creativity and imagination not allowed space any longer.
Well, it's nuts, isn't it? It's like you know, you might get to a point where British actors playing Americans. Well, no, you can't do that.
Yes, and then where will they get their baddies from?
I know. It turns out Daniel Craig isn't actually a spy. He went to drama school.
He did.
With you.
Yes. Well, we were at drama school at the National Youth Theatre. We were at the UFI. But other stuff going on in Catalonia as well. The rebels have been getting some news, haven't they?
Listen, a couple of years ago, quite a few years ago, there was the unauthorised / illegal referendum on Catalan independence, which was quite the controversy, actually. The people of Catalonia are about 50-50 about whether they wanted to be independent, and they were petitioning Madrid for a long time to say, can we have a referendum on this? And Madrid is no, you can't. So they said, I'll tell you what, we'll have one anyway. And there were those horribly violent scenes actually of the police running around smacking people with sticks.
Yes, it was really bad.
They were attempting to vote in the this referendum. I think was the result actually in favour of referendum, but it was not. Because, you know, there's nothing like it's a great motivating factor, isn't it, to start eating people with a stick and then say, would you like to be independent of us? Yes, I would, actually.
Yes, I think I'd like that.
The leader, Carlos Puigdemont, and his cohort of rebels fled the country, went to Brussels, I think, didn't they, for a while?
Yeah.
Because they have been in absentia. They've been sentenced to between 9 and 13 years in prison.
They've been gone for 4 years.
Yeah, well, 2017, actually, wasn't it, the referendum, but they have the European Parliament has waived their immunity, so they might be in a bit of trouble, actually. Yeah. They might be dragged back and slammed in the pokey.
Well, we'll keep people updated as to that. It's like it's a bit. I mean, I often say that Mallorca is like Wales, because the people that we have a lot of mountains. We have a lot of sheep, and we also have two languages and a fierce sense of identity, actually.
Absolutely, yeah.
And Mallorca isn't part of Catalonia, but I can understand how the Catalonians feel in that they may want to have more power and more autonomy over their decisions.
Yeah, if you go to Barcelona, you see the little yellow ribbons everywhere, don't you? Mm. It's the sign of... independent supporters.
I once went to Barcelona on a work trip to take pictures of a trade show, and I was there, and I don't speak Catalan. I do speak more or less speak Castellano, and I went into, I had to go and buy a cable for my camera or something in a shop opposite the trade show venue, and I went in there and spoke to this chap, and I was speaking to him in Spanish, and he refused to speak to me in Spanish and spoke to me in Catalan. Oh no, he tried to speak to me in Catalan. I was like, I don't understand Catalan. So he switched to English. He would not speak to me in Spanish.
Yeah.
Interesting, yeah. Huh?
It is. And it's far from done, that one.
So. Oh, yeah. Okay, so...
Now, speaking of democracy, we're going to get a vote.
Too late.
Also in the wrong country.
Let's choose.
For me, anyway.
Yeah.
As it stands at the moment, and for all of our time here, once you leave the UK, you have 15 years in which you can vote in general elections in the UK, and the referendum. Actually, that just squeaked
that
under
was the
our
last
15
thing
years.
I voted
yeah,
for.
Me too. Actually, there was a general election after that.
Yes,
and for
I think I got Tarina, to vote for that.
I got to vote for that, except they lost my vote. So I didn't.
Hmm.
Once your 15 years was up, that's it. You don't get to vote in the general UK general elections anymore. But that is about to change. Rishi Sunak's budget. I don't know why it was in the budget.
Well, because it takes money to organise this.
Okay,
that's
yes.
why it was in the budget.
So when Rishi Sunak...
It's kind of slid in that way.
...announced his budget last week in the UK, they did... It was hidden in the fine print was the fact they were going to restore the vote to British nationals living abroad.
Which is great news.
Indefinitely. So, well,
especially if you own property in the UK.
I guess so.
Or have some interest there still.
I mean, I did vote in the Brexit referendum because that is my business.
Mm.
But I generally take the view that, I mean, we don't live in the UK anymore. I don't really have any intention to go back and live there. So who runs the place is mostly not my business anymore. I'd really rather, if I had a choice, I'd rather have a vote here.
Me too.
Where we pay tax and live and all the rest of it.
As it stands, we only have a vote. Well, we don't have a vote in the European elections any longer because we're not European.
No.
What with us being British passport holders. But yeah, we do have a vote in the local election, which means that we have some say over, for example, the care of the roads.
Yeah.
But we do not, even though we pay our taxes and our national insurance, which is social security payments here, even though we pay all of that stuff to the national government, we do not have the right to vote for the national in the national elections.
Unless
we become Spanish citizens. Spanish.
Yeah.
Which is a gigantic pain in the hole.
Yeah.
Which is a 3-year process.
I do tend to agree with the Americans on the no taxation without representation.
Yeah.
If you want my taxes, let me vote. If you don't let me vote, you're not having my taxes, except I don't get to have that choice,
exactly. We don't have that conversation at all.
No.
So it's very, and that's a moot point, has been for a very long time. For us, isn't it?
Yeah, it certainly is. So, we are going to get a vote.
Just in the wrong country.
Yes, in the country that we haven't lived in for 17 years.
Shall we talk about how it's going, coronavirus department?
Go on then.
Okay, so here I'm going to just tell you about...
It's going well, isn't it?
Mallorca is covering itself in glory yet again, because we are pretty good at bringing down our coronavirus rate. We are very good. And even though it's been really hard this last year, it's a year tonight since we were locked down. Mm. We have, and it's been very hard on businesses, and boy, oh boy,
hasn't it?
We still stuck to the restrictions that we were made to take, and we've managed to do it again. And but now the restrictions are again opening up, and today some of the restrictions are going to be eased. So now two households can gather inside and outside. Only 6 people can meet, but there are some exceptions for people who live alone. Minors can meet parents if they live at different... Mm-hmm. Well, it's always been the same, that guys.
Yeah.
Minors can meet parents at different addresses if they don't live together any longer. Bar and restaurant terraces can now open to 50%, but only until 5:00. I bet they'll all be full today, as in as full as they can be. The weather's beautiful.
Yeah.
Only 4 people per table and up to 2 households. But on Monday, this Monday coming, you can be inside up to 30% of the occupancy. So that's good if the weather turns.
Yeah.
And on the back of all of these things, the tourist industry is getting quite excited.
It is getting quite excited. Before we say that, though, we should say that the ban on travellers from the UK has been extended again until March the 30th.
Mm.
It also includes travellers from
Brazil and South Africa.
This is based on coronavirus variants in those countries. And just to be really clear, that is travellers from those countries, not necessarily nationals of those countries.
Mm.
So if you are, and that excludes Spanish citizens and official residents, and that's the only exceptions at the moment. So, for instance, if you're a Spaniard returning from Britain, you're okay. If you're a Briton coming to Spain from Germany, you're okay, for instance. But it's just the travel from those things. And you can't do a short hop either. You can't fly to Germany and then jump on a plane to Spain.
You can't be sneaky.
No, you have to declare where you've been for the last 14 days. So if you wanted to come to Spain from Britain and you are not a resident, then you could fly to Germany, wait 2 weeks, and then fly here. And the Germans are coming back.
They are. The Germans are coming.
Yeah.
I never thought I'd be so happy to hear that.
Careful.
You know, because, I mean, like, around where we live, when the tourists hit our area, it gets a bit hard to like get a restaurant, a table in a restaurant or a park anywhere in the height of summer. But I think everyone will be just so happy to see some tourism back on the island.
Yeah.
At least I hope so, because I think a lot of people will be a little bit reticent because the vaccination levels in Mallorca aren't at the same, so haven't been going at the same speed.
Well, this is the roll of the dice, isn't it? I mean, they're welcoming travellers from Germany, and the German government seems to be happy for people to travel. They've declared that Mallorca is a low-risk area because of the numbers here are now very low. The German tour operators are ramping up their offering. Their flights are being put on. They're selling package holidays and all the rest of it. And here's the gamble, Germany and Spain have got comparatively low vaccination rates compared to the UK, which, as we mentioned before, is kind of racing ahead, doing very well. So they need to get the business here because the economy is on its arse. And a lot of people in a lot of trouble who normally work in the tourist business. So they need to get people here. But I don't know, I just get, maybe it's just me feeling a little cautious. It just feels a little uneasy to throw the borders open to country, to, you know, and particularly as they haven't got the vaccination passport in place yet, which they're planning to do, I think in May, aren't they, in theory. But as it stands, basically large amounts of tourists are going to come from Germany pretty imminently, that where they don't have high vaccination rates, to Mallorca, where we don't have very high vaccination rates.
But they, and also I did read recently that the Germans said, Germany, the German government said, yeah, everyone can travel, but don't go over Easter. In fact, I think over Easter, Spain has got very specific restrictions coming in about, like, not mixing families. And so there are, it's not over yet by a long way.
No, I mean, I do hope they don't rush it.
Mm. But Eurowings has announced that it expects to operate this is during the summer, though, actually.
Yeah.
300. The Eurowings has announced that it expects to operate 325 flights a week from Germany and the UK to 22 Spanish airports, including Palma, this summer. German government, as you said, has confirmed that Mallorca is no longer a risk destination. And I'm glad, because I know so many businesses that are desperate for the input of money.
It's also, I mean, Germany is the biggest market for Mallorca.
Yes.
The British second. So it's a
big deal,
huge chunk of the economy. Also, an awful lot of second homeowners, particularly where we are in Port Andratx. I mean, for the last X amount of weeks, whatever it was, all the bars and restaurants were shut. They opened up with restrictions, as you know, if you listen to our podcast, a week or so ago. And Port Andratx has transformed, actually. A lot of foreign homeowners chose not to come to Spain, because why would you if the bars are shut? So as soon as the bars opened, actually a lot of people got on planes to come and live in their homes here, because they could actually go and sit outside and drink coffee.
And it's not just, I mean, like, German tourism, from our point of view, isn't just a family going to on a package holiday for a week in a hotel and going to a resort. There are a lot of people here who come to stay in their second homes. And with that, then the money then trickles down to the property managers and the gardeners and to the real estate agencies and to us, to the photographers, to the writers. I mean, like, the money starts to move around again much more freely when people are moving.
Yes, yeah. So, I mean, our little municipality, Andratx in the southwest, is there. There's one little resort, Camp de Mar, which has some, you know, big-ish,
huge
tourist hotels,
big hotels.
But most of the rest of it is second homeowners.
Yeah.
So Port Andratx has quite a lot of restaurants. We have 30 plus restaurants.
And it's all restaurants and real estate agencies.
Yeah, it is.
And hairdressers.
And most of those are either, because there's not really any big hotels there. So most of those are second homeowners and people, day trippers. And most of the rest of the municipality is either working for real estate agents. I'm a photographer working with real estate agents, or, as you say, gardeners and builders and property managers and stuff. So it's an enormous chunk of our little economy here, just in the bottom left-hand corner of Mallorca.
But I guess most people are going to... In fact, you know what? I think I might be up for my vaccination soon, because... I think that because the Spanish aren't wanting to give the AstraZeneca vaccine to over 60s. Is that correct?
I don't know.
Well, I think it's the AstraZeneca vaccine. It's one of them. Anyway, and so they're worrying about giving it to older people. So what they're doing is they're giving it to younger people. And I and you fall into the 55, 45 age group, and I think they started with the 55-year-olds yesterday.
I believe so, yeah.
So it might not be long until we get our phone call, our call up for the jab.
Hmm, yeah.
Okay. That would be exciting.
But it is important, but one thing that is really, really important is that it reaches the lower age bracket quickly, because tourism is a people-to-people business.
Very much so.
And a lot of the people that work with tourists are young people. If you think about waiters and bus drivers and car rental people and receptionists and check-in clerks and people like that, they tend to be in their 20s and
30s. No, I don't agree, actually. That's a career for a lot of people. It's not something they do until they do something else.
So we need to get those people vaccinated. I mean, for instance, you've got a hotel receptionist, you know, there's a queue of people.
They're wearing a mask, though. Yeah. Even if you've had a vaccination, you're still wearing a mask.
Yeah, yeah. So it's important that it's done quickly, but anyway.
I wrote something today, actually, for the New Yorker Daily Bulletin, which is going in the paper tomorrow, and I might read it out later and put it at the end of this podcast.
Oh, good. Yeah, it's
it's a little reflection on what happened last year.
Yeah, to the day. That's nicely written, so yeah, read that out.
Thank you.
So, well, we're nearly done, but we should tell you about the next podcast.
Yes, the next podcast, which is going to feature a lot of coconut shells.
We went horse riding.
Boy, did we go horse riding.
It was great, actually.
It was amazing. This time last week, we were freaking out and getting ourselves organised, getting all packed up.
We went on holiday.
We went on holiday, but not by mistake.
To the middle of nowhere.
It was fantastic.
It was good. We went to as far as you can get from us in Mallorca, it was a whole epic hour and a half drive.
It was.
Which, if you've lived in Mallorca for a while, you know an hour and a half drive is like flying to the moon.
It's so
like,
weird.
You start packing snow shovels
and
sort of blankets.
Can you drive? I can't do it. That sort of thing. Yeah.
Yeah. We went up to the Parc Naturel, the event, which is up in the Arta municipality in the top right-hand corner.
And we stayed with Lizzie from Natur Cavai. We'll put a link to Natur Cavai if you're interested already to read more about them. And they run horse trekking rides and tours, overnight stays, expeditions and all sorts, adventures, basically, in the most beautiful scenery. We rode on beaches and up mountains.
You can imagine galloping a horse on a pristine white beach with nothing, nobody around. That's what
you get. That's what we did.
It is amazing. 6 hours.
My bum hurt the next day.
Mine still hurts.
No, that's too much information.
If you're going to not ride 30 years, don't go straight in with a 6-hour one.
You did really well, actually.
You
were cantering and filming. I mean,
I didn't have any choice really in the matter.
It's really impressive.
I wasn't cantering. The horse was cantering and I was hanging on.
Anyway, that's coming up next.
Trying not to squeak.
I have to go now.
Okay.
Because I've got stuff to do and it's Saturday morning.
All right, so you're going to read the article after this bit.
I have to get all organised and then I'll do it.
Super. So join us next time. That was episode 23-ish. Done.
Yeah. Happy weekend, everyone. Enjoy the sunshine.
Bye.
They've locked down Lombardy, my husband Oliver tells me. I'm cooking dinner for us and our daughter and our kitchen in our house. How can they lock up a whole region? I ask, my mind racing to understand the ramifications of a lockdown. We watch the news. It seems unreal of all those people confined to their homes because of a dangerous virus that was out of control. Surely this was the plot of a movie. It's March 9th, 2020. A couple of days before, we had completed the 7-day walk of the GR221 for my birthday. We had been sleeping in the refugios and shared dormitories with strangers, all of us in bunk beds, sharing the bathrooms, sitting next to each other, eating dinner and breakfast, laughing, making fun, having a conversation. Returning to our house and the news of the rapid spread of COVID-19 was shocking. My parents-in-law arrived from the UK for a week's visit. My mother-in-law, a retired nurse, presented me with some homemade surgical masks that she had sewn at home. "What are these for?" I asked scornfully. "You can't be too careful," she replied. "What, like an anxious Asian tourist in London? What an overreaction, I had told myself, and put the mask somewhere on a shelf. How naive I was. Friday, March 13th. Coronavirus was confirmed in every of the 50 states in Spain. I took my daughter to school in Palma. Babe, bring home your school books with you. I have a feeling that you won't be going to school for a week or so. My daughter looked at me as if I was mad. Okay. The news through the day, the rumours of a lockdown similar to Italy's. How could it not happen now? The virus was rampaging through the population. On the TV news, there were terrifying scenes of people in intensive care hooked up to ventilators. I think we're going to be locked down, I said, but only to myself and very, very quietly. And then the next day, on March 14th, 2020, we were. The news came to us in the evening. My father-in-law, already worried about getting back to the UK, began to panic a little about their flight. The text came that all the flights were cancelled, but now there would be repatriation flights. He spent hours on hold. On the Sunday, I went to a supermarket. Pulling into the car park and seeing 30 people in a queue just to get into the shop, I turned around and headed for the exit, briefly seeing the face of a client waiting in the line. I was definitely in a movie now. With no warning, the strictest lockdown in Europe was imposed upon us. How did we cope? We coped, like everyone else. Every day was exactly the same and completely different. Most days there were tears, at least from me, if not also from our daughter, who was desperate to be able to get out of the house and go to see our horse a mere 15-minute drive away. But with it being non-essential travel and under-18s banned from leaving the house, we just couldn't do it. Stay at home, wash your hands, clap at 8 o'clock every day. Clap became the defining point in the day in our house. Everything else was fluid. On the 25th of March, the official death toll in Spain surpassed that of mainland China at the time. The shopping trip became my responsibility. Preparing for it felt like I was about to fight in a zombie apocalypse, driving along empty roads which would normally have been busy, avoiding people, washing and washing my hands, disinfecting again in the car, trying not to touch metal in the petrol station because I had read somewhere that the virus stayed on metal for longer, putting the shopping outside in our yard when we got home to allow it time to breathe, stripping my clothes and putting them in a hot wash because maybe the virus was on the fabric. I did it all. I even would disinfect my dog's paws after taking them for their scheduled 50-metre walk for a pee. They hated that. But amongst all of this fear, confusion and terror, somehow we also found love, joy and community. I rang my mother every day. We played Cluedo via video call after the clap. My little family developed a passion for the Marvel movies and watched the entire series in order, one a night. We spent more time together than we have ever done before. We argued, we laughed, we played with our dogs, who will never know how much we relied on them for humour. We cooked and we ate. I learnt how to make bread and a decent curry through the chitching of my friends on Facebook in the Majorca Mallorca group. I still managed to do some work, but my husband's work stopped entirely. We worried about money a lot. We worried about the future. We worried about Mallorca. How would it cope? What would the pandemic mean for the economy? Could the health system manage? We lost friends to the virus, and we might still lose friends to the virus. But I am proud of how we lived through this past year. As soon as the lockdown was lifted, we went back to the things which we found still mattered the most to us. Swimming in the sea, being with the horse, training at CrossFit, riding a bike up a mountain, walking with the dogs in the Tramontana. In a way, the lockdown proved to us how right we had been to choose to live in Mallorca. Amongst these resilient people from all over the world, whose sense of community meant we all stayed in our homes because that was the right thing to do for each other. It's a year since a lockdown was imposed on us. Ask yourself, what have I learned in this last year about myself? And what can I be proud of? Mallorca, Mallorca,
Mallorca, Mallorca, let's call all three. Bloody good show and do a podcast about it.